Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz here. Day after a Game 1 loss for the Vancouver Canucks against the Calgary Flames last night at Rogers Arena. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. We're live from the Kintec studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at DunbarLumber.com. Now joining us to continue to break down last night's game, get a report from practice today as well. He is right from right here on Sportsnet 650, Brendan Batchelor. Batch, what's up, buddy?
Not much. How's it going, guys?
It's going well. We're having a lot of fun talking about that game last night. And I got to say, before we get into like the details and what went wrong and all that, I mean, you know, you've called many hundreds of Canucks games at this point. That's got to be up there in terms of just eventful games that you've called for the Canucks.
Yeah, you know, when I think about eventful games, I'm reminded like early in our tenure calling the games on the station, there was like a crazy game against Colorado that was like 7-6 or something like that. But you know, it's in the conversation for one of those, especially that first period was just wild and frantic and back and forth. And, you know, in the words of the late, great Bob Cole, everything was happening. So, you know, from a Canucks perspective in terms of results, hopefully they don't have too many more games like that, because I don't think that kind of fire wagon hockey is what Rick Tocchet wants to see from them. But from a fan's point of view, I'm sure it was an entertaining night. And anytime you show up at the rink and get to see 11 goals, even if your team doesn't win, you've been thoroughly entertained, I think it's probably fair to say.
Reacting to the game, was there anything that confirmed your priors, confirmed concerns you might have quietly harbored going into the season that you think is real? Or, alternatively, were there any things that confirmed your worst fears, but that you are actually like, yeah, but it's just one game. I jog.
Yeah, I mean, I think any analysis I'm going to provide is going to be couched with the, yeah, it's just one game. You know, I think the biggest thing for me is we talked so much about them pushing the pace and pushing the tempo and trying to be more aggressive offensively, and whether that was going to be at the expense of their defensive game. And I think, you know, again, a one-game sample size last night, it was. You know, Rick Tocchet sort of took the blame himself for the lack of focus on the defensive side of the puck through training camp, and that might have resulted in some of the breakdowns that we saw. So I imagine that's stuff that they'll work to dial in. And it was Adam Foote first at the whiteboard for quite a lengthy time at the start of practice today. So, you know, yeah, I think, you know, the two things that jump to mind immediately are, you know, how you marry trying to increase your offensive output while still being the strong defensive team you were last year. And then the other thing, which is also of note at practice today because they made a change to it, is the third pairing and the concerns about the lack of mobility and puck moving ability. And today we see Noah Juulsen there in place of Vincent Desharnais skating alongside Derek Forbert. So again, one game sample size, I'm not too worried about any of it, but you know, as Rick Tocchet said last night, if it's something that carries on for three or four more games, then maybe the concern level rises a bit.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing and what will be interesting to monitor, right? Because look, there were some mistakes in the defensive zone yesterday that were very uncharacteristic for this team. But I mean, if you almost want to take an optimistic point of view coming out of that game, if there's one thing we should have a relative degree of confidence in this team being able to clean up based on what we saw last year, right? It's their play in the defensive zone. So if that, like, and I'm not saying necessarily was the biggest concern, there's some other things we should get into or we can get into, but if that's one of your biggest concerns coming out of last night, well, they also have a pretty good track record of being able to, you know, get back to basics on that, fix that, and be a pretty good team in their own defensive zone.
Yeah, well, and the other thing, and, you know, not that we want to sort of pile on the goaltending after one game either.
No,
but
let's do it.
I heard Halford on the morning show today say, yeah, they weren't good defensively, but I don't think they were six goals against Calgary bad defensively, right? So, you know, Shelovs could have been better, and I think that's probably a big factor in the game. So, yeah, because it's one game, because it's the first game, because it's all we have to analyze everything's going to get blown out of proportion, whether it be some of the, you know, mistakes in coverage in the D zone that led to goals, whether it be some of the long shots that beat Archer Shelovs. But you're right. This is a team that got better and better defensively as the season went on. So it's not an area of concern in the long term, but I think what will be interesting to follow, and this hasn't changed, you know, regardless of the result from last night, is whether they can combine being that strong defensive team and not do it at the expense of the offense that they need to create.
What do you think of the lineup changes here? Atu Ratu maybe sticking at center with Pew Suter and Connor Garland, Hoglander bumping down to the fourth line, Neil Zaman, who played a lot last night, was a key part of a penalty kill that looked pretty good, drawing out of the lineup. What's your reaction to some of what Rick Tocchet has already gone about modifying based on his practice lineup on Thursday?
Yeah, I think it means there's a lot of trust there with Ratu, and he really values the ability for him to take draws on the right-hand side over how he values Neil Zaman as a penalty killer, or at least, again, one game, one practice. After that game, small sample size, all these caveats have to apply. But, you know, I think this means a rise of the stock of Atu Ratu, and then a slight decrease in the stock of both Neil Zaman and Niels Hoglander for him to move down the lineup, which is interesting because he kind of spotted Hoglander up the lineup briefly in the third period last night when things were going against them. But I do wonder, and again, like I'm a puck watcher because I call the play-by-play, so I haven't had a chance to go back and break down all the goals, but whether there were some issues defensively with Hoglander that resulted in him being moved down the lineup, you know, you guys would be better to analyze that than I would. But I think it is interesting that, you know, Hoglander, in spite of what he is capable of offensively and what he is able to do on the forecheck, you know, continues to have a tough time gaining the consistent trust of this head coach. And not that that trust hasn't been there, because he, I think, was moved to the top six in early February last year and didn't leave the top six other than when he came out of the lineup in the Oilers series. But the fact that he came out of the lineup in the Oilers series, the fact that, you know, he finds himself on the fourth line after the first game of the season, you know, there's something there. I'm not sure if it's something to be extremely worried or concerned about, but it does say something that he was moved down a line, I think.
I thought he was one of their best two-way forwards in the latter 40 minutes, okay, to be totally honest with you. What do you think, Jamie?
I thought the Garland-Hoglander pair was like one of the bright spots for me,
yes,
coming out of
agreed.
The game, to be honest. I was like, that's something I want to see more of.
Yes.
I really liked it. I thought it was fun.
But you know what? I did sort of think, as the game went on and as, you know, the likes of Pospisil running around and stuff, like, I did think that the absence of Dakota Joshua was noticeable. Like, I did think that the Canucks looked a little small up front. Just as a group last night, I also thought they looked dynamic and fast, but I did think there were moments where that lack of size, where the absence of Dakota Joshua, like far more so than the absence of even like a Lindholm or a Zadorov, was notable to me.
Okay, so that, let's talk about this from the other side of things then. Does putting Hoglander on that line with Sherwood mean that he's trying to create another line that can be a forechecking presence and bring some of what you're missing with Joshua out of the lineup? Is that the better way to read into the changes today, maybe?
I wonder if it's to throw like another driver on the fourth line.
In the bottom six.
Yeah.
Have two lines with real offensive threats
with,
in the bottom six.
With guys that Rick Tocchet would describe as a buzzsaw.
Yeah, Garland drives one line, Hoglander drives the other.
Don't want to put all your buzzsaws in one basket.
Well, especially because we know that the lines are going to mix and match anyway situationally, and we also know that like it's pretty flat between fourth line and third line ice time with the Canucks. I mean, the way Rick Tocchet runs his bench, like, Danton Heinen could play less than Niels Hoglander, regardless of where they take line rushes on Friday.
Oh, and especially with Joshua out of the lineup, too, I would imagine he doesn't deploy that third line in exactly the same way that he would if he had all of those guys together based on how strong they were last year, where you're right, oftentimes they were playing top 6 minutes, even though they were, quote-unquote, the third line.
Well, and I think part of the discussion we're having, right, about the new looks at practice and moving Hoglander around, and I'm curious how much it might have played a part in the result last night as well, is, you know, the Canucks have a lot of new faces, and it's really everywhere in the lineup, right? Like Danton Heinen, new with Miller and Besser. Pettersson with two new line mates who haven't played together before, right? Atu Ratu, young player, trying to establish himself in the NHL. The, you know, the top four on defense the same, but then the new bottom pairing. And I'm wondering, Batch, what your perspective is on, you know, first, how much did that kind of process of integrating new players contribute to last night's result? And I mean, how much do you think that will be a theme in terms of the results we see, but also kind of the tinkering that we see from the coaching staff here for the first part of the season as they try to figure out, okay, we have all these new pieces, how do we use them? How do we get the most out of them now?
Yeah, well, that's obviously going to be a work in progress. It's not necessarily something that you're just going to bring all these new guys in and put them on lines and it's magically going to work perfectly. Chemistry is a strange thing and isn't always the lines that you would expect that are the lines that become good. Like if we had said, you know, prior to last year when Joshua was being criticized for his conditioning and moved to the second practice group during the preseason, that he and Bluger and Garland would be one of the biggest factors in the Canucks' tremendous run last year, you know, that's not a line that people would have said, oh yeah, that makes a ton of sense that those guys would have that chemistry. But yet, it worked. So that is a part of this. It's going to be a work in progress. I also think, you know, getting back to what Tocchet was discussing last night about, you know, focusing a lot on transition play and maybe not dialing in as much on the defensive side of things. This was a team that was very good defensively last year that played to its structure. But when you have a guy on every forward line that wasn't here last year, wasn't part of that structure, when you have, you know, a third of your blue line, I guess it'll be different if Juulsen goes in tomorrow, but again, a third of your blue line last night that wasn't here, wasn't part of that structure, and I don't think it's any coincidence that that pairing was the pairing that struggled the most with the style that the Canucks want to play. So this is why it's an 82-game season. This is why you can't win or lose the Stanley Cup on the opening night, is there are going to be bumps in the road. You're not going to go 82-0. You're not even going to go 81-1 now that they've lost the first game of the season. So, you know, I'm sure there will be tinkering. In fact, I was a little surprised there wasn't more tinkering to the lines today, to be honest. But again, I think Tocchet has been preaching so much to not read into one game that, you know, it may take a couple more performances that he doesn't like before he kind of blows things up in terms of what his forward group looks like in particular.
Now, I think we all know it's, you know, I jog, right? It's just one game. I wish we'd remembered that, by the way, Jamie. What a great thing you coined.
I know. I'm really smart. And then I forgot about it.
Yeah. anyway, I think we all know I jog, all that. But if you're concerned about the mobility of the Canucks defense, and if you're concerned about the goaltending, the Philadelphia Flyers come to town on Friday. The Canucks will face them again in Philadelphia. Not this weekend, but next. This team has Joel Farabee, Travis Konechny, Owen Tippett, Matvei Michkov, Jet Luchenko might be in the line. Lots of youth, lots of speed. And as we saw when the Canucks played Philadelphia twice last year, it's actually a really bad matchup for Vancouver given the way that this team can pick you apart off the rush and given the way that they defend. Does what happened last night raise the stakes for Friday?
I don't think it raises the stakes so much.
Pushes everything in the middle of the table, Batch.
Early in the season. But I will say, I think it's the perfect opponent for them to face coming out of a game where, you know, the line out of the dressing room last night was, we thought it was going to be easy and we let our foot off the gas. You know, regardless of whether they're a skilled team or not, they're coached by John Tortorella. You cannot afford to let your foot off the gas for even a second against a team like the Philadelphia Flyers. And, you know, case in point, the Canucks had a great season last year, won the division, went to game 7 of the second round. You could argue their absolute worst performance of the year was that third game of the season in Philadelphia to start out that Eastern road trip. And, you know, they've got the Flyers at home first this time, but then they do head out east again to play a lot of those same teams that they faced on that same road trip last year. You know, they went to Philly first last year and then went through Florida, and that is being flipped, assuming the games in Florida are able to go ahead as scheduled. But, you know, the Flyers, what you think of them in terms of their, you know, long-term or short-term ability this season to be a playoff team, or whether they've got enough skill, or whether they're trending in the right direction or not, you know that they are going to work their butts off. And if you're the Canucks, you have to be ready to show up and play a 60-minute game against them on Friday. So coming off a game where you didn't do that, and all the talk is about how you need to do that, it's the perfect team to face, because they will hold you accountable to that. And, you know, if they don't realize that in that dressing room, then they will certainly learn it the hard way tomorrow night at Rogers Arena.
Yeah, and of course, the Tampa Bay Lightning versus Carolina Hurricanes game this weekend, the Lightning home opener, has been canceled. Do you think when a tropical storm causes a Hurricanes game to get canceled, it feels differently about it?
I don't know. I had not thought about
that's
that.
That's the
at
dumbest
all.
Question I've ever been asked on radio.
You said it, not me. You said it, not me.
Goaltending wise, you know, I think we entered the season knowing that there were going to be some question marks about, you know, building a bridge to when Thatcher Demko returns. Artur Shelov's had a tough night. Goaltenders have tough nights. Did it change or not change? Let's not put it that way. How should we be thinking about Canucks goaltending, given that the effort to sort of build that Demko bridge got off to such a tough start?
Yeah, I think it has to be more of a talking point than it was through the preseason, because, you know, Randeep and I were talking about it on the air before the drop of the puck yesterday. It was kind of astonishing how little of a storyline it was through the preseason that, you know, your Vezina runner-up goaltender has an unprecedented injury with no timeline, and you've got a goaltender of 9 career regular season games prior to last night, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, a guy who's been a career backup coming in to hold the fort down, and nobody seems concerned. And you can understand why, because of how good the Canucks were defensively last night. But we saw, with a few cracks in the way they played in their own zone, Shelov's was exposed a little. Now, the other thing I also think could be a factor here is that the Flames, at least through, again, through the preseason, through one game in the regular season, the Flames were the team that exposed Shelov's the best in 2 meetings. They got to him in the preseason game in Calgary in that same way, and they got to him last night. So, you know, maybe it's a bad matchup for Shelov's with the way that Calgary tries to generate offense and tries to play. But there do have to be questions there going forward, and there's going to be a little bit more pressure on him to respond to some of the I think, fair criticisms of his game and some of the goals he's let in. I don't know how much it changes my feeling about it until we see Kevin Lankinen in there and see how he does. Because if he comes in, let's say he plays tomorrow, has a really strong effort, they play a little bit better defensively, and they find a way to win, and they head out on the road with 3 of a possible 4 points out of the first 2 home games, then I think things look a lot more rosy from that perspective, and you can get a little bit optimistic about what Lankinen might be able to do. And then also, if Lankinen can play well, that relieves some of the pressure on Shelov's that he may not have to be the every night guy, and he's not going to have to steal games for them in order for them to have success going forward. But, you know, I would understand if there was, you know, knowing this market, I'll use this term, mild panic, if Kevin Lankinen has a rough outing if he goes in tomorrow against Philadelphia.
I'm picturing, like, you know, at a restaurant that has a lot of spicy food and they have like the chili pepper scale. This is like a 1 chili pepper on the panic scale. Mild panic so far today. We're not going up to 2 or 3 chili peppers.
It's like
yet.
It's like just 1,500 Scovilles.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, that's, but I mean,
how do you panic mildly,
like,
though?
In this market around this team, it feels like there's always some level of panic. So maybe it's a little bit higher than 1,500.
Can you demonstrate what would mild panic sound like? If it was like, Batch, there's a situation, we should mildly panic. What does that, like, you know, can you help me imagine what this emotion should be?
Yeah, let's think. More like, Trance, I don't know what's happening. Like, there's a bit of panic
good.
In my voice.
That was
like,
pretty good.
What are we doing?
Wow, I know exactly
okay?
what it means now.
It's bubbling up, but it's not, like, you know, overcoming you yet.
Yeah, it's more like be aware, this is like something that needs your attention right now. Yeah, I get that. I like that.
Let's be a little bit concerned here. Like, I'm a little uncomfortable.
Oh, that's fantastic, Batch. Thanks for doing this, buddy. Enjoy the rest of your day, man.
Thanks, guys. I'll accept my Oscar nomination.
Thank you, Batch. The multi-talented Brendan Batchelor here, of course, the voice of the Canucks on Sportsnet 650. It reminds me of from Arrested Development. I may have committed a little light treason. It's like, oh, I didn't know we were giving gradations to things like treason
or panic.
And panic. But
like,
yeah,
it.
Some mild panic and well demonstrated there.
Some commentary in the inbox. This is the biggest day one overreaction. She loves was fine. The team in front of him was completely flat for two periods in overtime. I think that's fair, but I also think they were probably worth like three goals against, maybe two goals against on the game.
This is something that comes up a lot throughout the course of the season. Was the goalie bad or was the team in front of him bad? And it's like, the answer can actually be both.
No,
right?
But
both teams can do, both parties there can do things wrong.
But there needs to be a preponderance. Like, we have to be able to say, like, the Canucks had more breakdowns last night than they did most of the time in sort of the second half of last season. But not like by a bit. They were in aggregate firmly in control of that game and easily the better team, except that Calgary scored a ton of goals from distance and one goal from down low when Canucks skaters started panicking and cheating in trying to cut off the top. That shaped the game. I don't know what else to say. I think that's plain to see.
From Shelov's end, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. I don't think it's, and again, it's not letting the rest of the team off the hook or anything. They had problems as well. They were super flat.
Yeah.
They didn't have enough energy. They didn't have enough juice, of course, but Shelov's also let some goals in that he's got to stop.
Well, and we'll get more into it, but this market is sleeping on Lankinen and probably too high on Shelov's. Texts in another unsigned list, another unsigned text from a listener, and I think that's a pretty good take. Like, Lankinen's been, at the very least, like, playable, average, sturdy NHL-level goaltender across 100-plus games throughout his NHL career. Shelov's has played phenomenal hockey in some really big spots at both the international and at the NHL level, but consistency has always been a question mark with him throughout his career. I think both will probably be okay. I'm expecting both to be okay, but, you know, there's certainly a higher floor with Lankinen, which we've discussed ad nauseum since he signed here.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll continue to read your texts next. Open segment coming up. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. So get your reactions into last night's season opening Canucks loss and looking forward to the Philly game tomorrow as well. Reminder, at 1:30, we'll also chat with Vancouver Giants GM Barclay Pernetta. And hopefully the Canucks practicing out at UBC will get some Rick Tocchet audio in that we can play for you before the end of the show as well. More Canucks talk coming up here on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It's Thomas Drantz. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Introducing Seeker, Canada's new free app for your ears. Dive into live radio, captivating podcasts, the latest news and sports updates, all in one place. Whether you're rediscovering music, debating last night's game, or laughing along with your favorite DJ, Seeker has you covered. Plus, there are some of the best prizes in the country up for grabs. It's all here in one easy-to-use app. Download Seeker for free from the App Store or Google Play. Seeker, seek your sounds, find the radio, podcast, news, and sports you love. All right, diving into the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line. As expected, lots of thoughts coming in about that game last night at Rogers Arena. I wanted to read this one. Keith and Kitts texts in. It felt to me like the Canucks thought it was cookie night after that first period. They disrespected their opponent and paid the price. Great learning experience right out of the gates. And that text, so I watched the first period of the game last night at home with
cookie night, by the way.
Oh, man, who doesn't? Can't blame them for hoping it was cookie night. I watched the first period of the game at home with my six-year-old daughter. She's very excited. It's 4-1. She's really hyped. That's her bedtime then. She goes to bed. Wake her up in the morning. And first question, Dad, did the Canucks win last night? I was like, no, actually, it was 4-1 when you went to bed. They ended up losing 6-5 in overtime. And she kind of thought about it for a second. And she's like, they probably got lazy because they scored so many goals already. And I was like, all right, the younger generation's coming for my job. She could be doing this job right now.
A pretty good take.
It's like, you know what? You could do a lot. You will see and read and hear a lot worse analysis than that on that game. They had a lot of juice out of the gates, and then they were juiceless for the rest of the game.
So the problem with that, though, is like I thought that in real time as Calgary made it 4-2 and as Calgary made it 4-3. And as I was watching it, I was just thinking to myself, OK, well, this is, you know, big brother, little brother dynamic. You've got, you know, one side holding little brother at bay with the one arm outstretched while they swing wildly. And at some point, if they actually make contact, it's going to be game over. Jover. Very quickly. And the Canucks' push never came. And in fact, Calgary tied it. And then Calgary took the lead.
Mm-hmm.
And then Calgary held the lead. And honestly, like, other than the exceptional play by Quinn and Miller, that was it. That was it. Like, there was no sustained pressure. There was none of those rush chances we saw in the first. The Canucks never, you know, threw a fastball. So, you know, like, to compare it, for example, to the – do you remember the Minnesota game last year? Where things really unraveled.
The Smith one where it was like, what did it finish? Like 10?
It was a wild
something.
Like,
it was something insane.
But I remember because I was actually hanging out with Cody Hodgson in Winnipeg. I was writing a Hodgson feature.
Brag.
Name drop. No, but I missed the game because I was watching AHL hockey, and I went back and I was like, I have to see what happened. Like, I need to understand exactly what happened. And I was watching it, and I'm like, man, the Canucks played great. Like, once they started throwing their fastball here, they looked as dynamic as they've looked all season. They just kept, you know, having pucks go into their own net off of sticks or skates, or like it was just bad luck. They threw a fastball that probably touched 99 in the first period, but they had nothing left over the back half. So to me anyway, it's almost like more like I came away from that Minnesota game. I remember being like, oh, man, if the Canucks actually have that gear in them, in their bag here, you know, regardless of what happens one game or another, they're going to be scary heading down the stretch and in the playoffs. This game didn't have that because the Canucks never found a gear to punch back. Like, they never found their footing again in that game, frankly, aside from, you know, one exceptional sequence from two players.
But I don't think that tells us, and I know, not that you're saying this, right? Because teams can be flat for 40 minutes and not be able to get out of it, right? Like, that happens. And it doesn't mean they won't be able to get out of it in other games.
Well, it happens, but against the Flames?
Yeah.
Man, come on. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm not saying it's a concern or something that I expect to happen again, but it's not nothing. You know what I mean? It's not nothing. It's something that I'm going to file away.
Well, and
sure.
I definitely think I was expecting a very different performance in the third period, right? After, because what, it was 4-2 going into the third, right? So you'd kind of
but I felt like
survived the really disastrous second.
I just didn't feel like the Flames had great chances, though, in the second. Like, I thought they were working the puck up high.
Sure,
and
but that, like, it could have, the second easily could have been enough of a wake-up call for the Canucks to be like, hey, guys, come on, let's be professional here and finish out this third period.
Well, sure, I expected a professional effort in the third, but I also just thought if Calgary gets another one here, the Canucks are going to open up and just destroy them, completely outclass them the way they had in the first period. And it that never came, and that was a surprise to me. As I was watching in real time. And it's sort of why, you know, the cookie night theory or your daughter's they got lazy theory, I kind of struggle with, because if that was the case, you know, fine. It's one thing to put a game in cruise control early
in the
season.
You're saying, like, if it had been a matter of, like, turning the switch off, then they should have been able to turn it back on.
Correct.
Relatively easy at
Correct.
Some point.
Well, yeah. And that's usually how it goes. Like, you see that all the time in games. They couldn't find the switch again. They had, I think, structural issues moving the puck. Like, I think there was more going on. I just think that's, like, there are games where that's true or what have you, or, like, you know, games, even collapses where that there's things outside a team's control that are primarily responsible. I just feel like last night was a little bit different because, again, it's one thing to hold a little brother at bay with your arm outstretched, but to not end it once they make contact squarely with your chin, that's a different matter entirely. That's, hey, actually, little brother might be stronger than you. You know what I mean? Or maybe you're not as strong as you think. That, to me, it's a little bit different, and I don't know that that theory is one I'm buying.
I did think it was interesting, you know, Batch brought up when we were talking to him the early season on the road Philadelphia game last year, right? Which I think was the third game after they'd won the first two against Edmonton, right? In just, very different fashions.
Yes.
But they'd won the first two, one here, of course, the 8-1 one, and then the close one in Edmonton. And then, of course, the famous line from Rick Tocchet after that disappointing, really poor performance in Philadelphia
Who
are we to think we're anybody? And I do get similar vibes to that from that game last night, right? Like, now he didn't use that line. He didn't repeat it, right? But he did say it was a year and a half ago hockey and all of that. And
see, I strongly disagree. I strongly disagree with that, too. The Philadelphia game, if you go watch it again, that was arguably Demko's best performance of the season. Like, the reason that 2-0 loss in Philadelphia was concerning is that it easily could have been like 8-0. But Demko was superhuman, and it completely didn't matter. Like, they got legitimately one of like the 5 or 6 best goalie performances anyone put together last season and lost 2-0. You know, like, that's ugly. I don't think the Canucks were in the same realm as poor defensively last night. They weren't even close.
Yeah, but I think it's more, I'm talking more about a mentality thing, right?
Right.
Of just like, were you approaching the game with the right mentality?
But I'd say again, the mentality was worse in that Philadelphia game because they were so much flatter and so much more permissive defensively. The Canucks, like, spent 40 minutes getting narrowly outplayed by the Flames.
And I think that's fair. There's a reason Tocchet didn't carve them nearly as much as he did after that Philadelphia game, right?
There was more, yeah, the difference between those two games is mostly in net.
But
in
I will say, I think part of last year was every time the Canucks played a poor game, pretty much, were challenged by the coach, it felt like things might be going off the rails.
They kept responding.
They rebounded, and they responded, right? And again, look, it's game two. But it was a disappointing, like, look, you blew a 4-1 lead to a team that you think you're way better than, that everyone thinks you should be way better than, at home on night one. That's a really disappointing result. We don't even have to say anything about what it means for the rest of the season to acknowledge that sucks. That's not what you wanted. That's not the way you wanted to start your season. So if we're like, as we think about what good from last season is going to carry over from that team to this team, one of the things you would really like to see carry over is that responsibility, right? Not responsibility, but you know what I mean? The ability to respond when you do have a poor performance, when people are a little disappointed with you, when it feels like things aren't exactly going your way, to immediately almost get things back on the rails. That's what I want to see. I mean, we'll talk more about the Philly game, but like, that's one of my big questions is, okay, do they still have that group mentality to say, you know what, we're going to own what we did. We weren't good enough. We know how to fix it. And you're going to see it in action right away, like they were able to do so often last year.
Yeah. Look, they will get on track. I expect, I think we also, you know, as much as we've talked about the things that are concerning, aren't concerning, the things we buy, the things we don't buy. Like, I liked large swaths of their game, right? Like, I come out of that game thinking, man, this is, you know, as skilled a forward group as the Canucks have put together in a long, long time. There were elements of Vancouver's game that I really, really was impressed by. I thought the power play looked great. I thought the new additions, almost to a man, looked phenomenal up front. So, you know, there's stuff that looked good in that game that also we have to take in the spirit of Ijog. And it's as fair to focus on those as anything else. Here's one though that I see being talked about a little bit that I really have no time for, and this won't surprise you, is when people are like, the Canucks were 42-1-4 when holding a lead after 40 minutes last season. Like, where did that team go? And it's like, do you know how meaningless that stat, which I was calling meaningless all year long anyway, that stat was so meaningless that by the time the Canucks got to the playoffs, they lost multiple games in which they led after 40 minutes. Like, once the chips were down, they lost one to the Predators in exactly that circumstance. Like, it doesn't matter. It's not predictive. It teams win when they're leading after 40 minutes. Like, I don't know what sport people think they're watching. That to me is like zero concern. I do think this team is going to be able to defend because I don't think they defended that badly last night, to be totally honest with you. I thought there were gaps, but I'm far more concerned about the fact that the offense dried up, because that to me was what I was so impressed by in the first, right? Like,
I would say even specifically the inability to get out of their zone.
Right.
Because that obviously has a huge role in the offense drying up. And I do think it made the overall defensive performance look worse than it was, because they were spent so much time in their defensive zone. And you're right. It wasn't as if then all of a sudden Calgary racked up grade A scoring chances at this incredible rate. There was a couple of really key breakdowns, but it was just more that once Calgary got in their zone, the Canucks couldn't get out, right? And you can point a lot of fingers at the bottom two defense pairings for that. That's something that we've talked about a lot. Is there going to be enough puck moving there? But just in general, you know, it's not as if their puck moving game was dramatically different at the beginning of last year, right, on their bottom pairs, certainly before Zadorov was added to the team. So I think they should be able to hit a higher level there. But that was a big
part
of it.
Ian Cole is like a pretty good puck mover.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then they played that stretch with Friedman and Cole pre-Zadorov as their second pair. So I disagree with you that it wasn't different. I think you did have more mobility and better puck moving on your bottom two pairs, until
the beginning of last year. And then obviously when Zadorov comes in,
and then they get Zadorov by the end of November. So it's like that there was only a pretty brief stretch where I think the Canucks would have had a similar level of puck moving. And here's where we sort of... You know, I think meet like where the rubber meets the road in terms of this rush storyline, which obviously I've been tracking closely, right? It's one of the things that I'm watching most closely from the Canucks. That's been true since training camp. It was true, you know, right off the hop of our season, but also, you know, throughout the summer and into today. And, you know, when you think about what rush attacking requires, right? Like, there's elements of the game that are going to be outside your control that shape a club's ability to generate off the rush, right? The play needs to be in your end of the rink, not in the offensive end of the rink. You need to string together a series of pretty difficult sequences, right? There's a defensive play you have to make, right? A change of possession you have to control, and then a quick outlet. Right. And you probably do generally need to find the opposition at least somewhat out of position or leaning in some way if you're going to get the sort of outnumbered opportunity that you're generally looking for. Right. So there's calculated risks at play in all of these engagements. And as impressive as Vancouver's forwards looked when carrying the puck with pace through the neutral zone, you know, without Hughes and Hronek as a pair on the ice connecting things, I do think it's fair to wonder, right? Especially in contrast with the controlled, disciplined, conservative way that the non-Hughes pairs functioned offensively last season, right? Whether or not the Canucks are trying to live in two worlds, right? They're trying to live in this world with their big defense and this grinded out style and this defensive excellence that they established last year, while also finding ways to create a higher volume of chances off the rush. Okay, that sounds good in theory, but Vancouver's defensive excellence was so significantly built on not taking chances, on removing the oxygen from games, on trying to effectively dominate offensive zone possession. Don't worry too much about generating stuff off the rush. Don't worry about generating chances even, because every chance we take is a breakdown that could cause a chance to go the other way against us. With Hughes and Hronek not on the ice, you know, does Vancouver have enough in terms of defenders that can key the rush, get them going in the right direction, and connect play to pull this off? Like, is there a sense to which you've now built this like smaller, faster forward group, okay, that maybe isn't as well suited to playing the sort of grinded out hockey, the cardio Kings hockey that the Canucks played so excellently last season in combination with the big defense? Like, have you built a forward group that's a mismatch for how you
played
last year
with your defensive
and a defensive group that's incompatible with the evolution you want to make in terms of being a more dynamic attacking team? Like, are you trying to live in both worlds, and is that going? Are you going to be able to find the sweet spot or thread the needle? I'm not saying yes or no. It's just a thought that I had, a reaction that I had. A question that I'm curious to track is this sample pools over the course of the season.
Well, and I think most people's reaction, it's an interesting thought you lay out there, right? And I think my kind of just reaction in real time, and I think it's one probably that a lot of people would share, is even if it is a bit of a smaller group, and look, we'll see when Dakota Joshua gets back. We know what an impact he can have
in
the lineup,
help a lot.
Right? It changes things dramatically. I would have more faith in Rick Tocchet and the coaching staff being able to get the forward group to the level they need to be at over the course of the season through coaching, right? Through the teaching process that we've seen Rick Tocchet do already here with the Canucks to get them to that level, if not at last year's level, at least something close enough to it where they can still be a really good team. I have more confidence in that process than the idea that, okay, we have some serious puck moving limitations in our bottom two pairs, but we're going to coach up around that. Like, that sounds much harder to coach up around to me than the, like, defensive miscues from the forwards that we saw last night.
But the thing you can't escape here, right? The thing that's really important is that if this team doesn't find a way to sustainably generate more while preserving as much of their functional defensive identity as possible, that massively lowers their ceiling. Mm-hmm. Like, you should be willing, if you're the Canucks, to regress by 10 points in the standings this year if it means that you're a tougher opponent on April 19th when your first round series starts.
If that's the price you got to pay because you're doing some tinkering and you're not just falling back on, all right, we're going to shut it down and be conservative like last year in the early going, that's a price you pay.
If the Canucks weren't trying to evolve, they probably would have won game one, in my opinion. If they came out and just played template Rick Tocchet hockey exactly like they did, like, just let's, you know, replay the book from last season, we'll do the hits. Everyone makes conservative puck handling decisions. We're going to hunt for deflections. We're going to take zero chances. We're going to change on the fly. We're going to grind them down low, below, beneath the hash marks. I think they're more likely to have won the game last night and far less likely to have had the sort of breakdowns than they actually did. But the ceiling would be capped on them as a like plucky team that maybe can overachieve in the playoffs as opposed to a real contender. Like, we don't live in a world anymore where, like, defense beats a good offense is necessarily true. It's still important, don't get me wrong. But, like, the Stanley Cup final was contested between the two best teams at generating quality looks 5-on-5, right? No below average team at generating quality looks 5-on-5 made the conference final, okay? The Canucks and the Washington Capitals, who made the playoffs with, like, a minus 40 goal differential, were the only teams that really were like bottom 10 in the league in this category that qualified for the playoffs. And Vancouver's company in this area was like Detroit, Montreal, Arizona. Mm-hmm. Like, you can win if you've got an exceptional goaltender, which, you know, jury's out for the Canucks over the course of the next few weeks anyway, and maybe, you know, all season. If your defense is exceptional and if you have, you know, just enough transcendent elite skill to bail you out in those moments where you really need it. By the way, the Canucks got another play like that just last night. But if you can't, when the competition ramps up and the stakes are highest in the Stanley Cup playoffs, find ways to generate chances against the best teams, then it's going to look like it did when the Canucks played game 6 and 7 against the Oilers. Like, they scored one goal across 50 minutes until they were basically eliminated. And that was with a chance to advance to the conference final. They scored 3 goals across 2 games. They had, I think, like 25 shots across the 2 games, 27 shots, something like that. Like, it was like you needed a bounce. You needed to get lucky. Mm-hmm. You had no solutions. You had no outs. Trying to generate off the rush, trying to be a more imposing team with a more dynamic forward group, like, that's the right approach. But there probably are going to be growing pains attached to it. I just think we saw those last night.
And I do wonder, but the point I was making about, you know, I think one of those things can be solved by coaching, the other one not so much, is, look, what, it was end of November when they made the Nikita Zadorov trade, right? And I think a big question for me coming into this season was, how long does the, you know, jumbo blue line on the bottom two pairs but not much puck moving experiment last, right? And look, again, hashtag iJog, it's just one game, so it's not over yet. They're going to have more time to tinker, but we're already seeing Noah Juulsen get a spot or get a look in Vincent Desharnais's spot at practice today. And at a certain point, if it is just too much to ask of that defensive group, I think the management is going to have to consider going out and trying to add to the group, trying to find somebody who can both earn Rick Tocchet's trust, but also move the puck at a much higher level than Myers, Forbort, Desharnais.
Well, and that's also it, right? Like, as much as there are some reasonable concerns we might have about, you know, what this like evolutionary or adjustment process might look like, you know, provided that the Canucks get a reasonable baseline, it doesn't even have to be an average baseline, but a reasonable baseline from Lankinen and Shelov's here, they're going to be fine. Like, they're going to be fine. They're going to figure this out. There's too much talent up front for them not to figure it out, in my opinion. Given the state of the Pacific Division, you know, it's going to require something pretty spectacular in terms of the goaltending issue. And then, you know, in terms of leveling up further, you know, I do think how aggressively this management team can mine an upgrade to their defense core is going to be a crucial part. Like, as much as everyone says it's going to be all about Demko, it's like it is. That'll help a lot if Demko comes back and is vintage Thatcher Demko and durable in that role. But I do think upgrading the defense is going to be an essential component that this team's going to have to pull off if we're going to get to April talking about them as a contender.
And somebody texted, guys, it's game one of 82. Come on. Listen, man, you don't have to tell us. It's just one game. We coined the hashtag iJog here, all right?
But I'm asking questions, things I'm curious to see.
And also, I will say, like, in most of our season preview talk, one of the things I was bringing up was, What changes do they make? And for me, the one that always stood out was a second pairing defenseman who can move the puck at a higher level, right? So it's not as if I'm like, oh man, based on what we saw in game one, all of a sudden I think they need this.
But you are now like, oh, that game confirmed my priors.
No, it didn't completely confirm them, but it's like, all right, this is still on watch. It certainly didn't answer my questions
around that,
right? And as long as we're seeing things like this, I think that's going to be a very legitimate question, right? How long does it last? Again, I'm not saying it should be over. I'm not saying it is over, but of course it's going to be something we're talking about.
We've done enough iJog contextualizing that I don't even think we're being like that negative about what we saw. But I do think this rush question is a real factor. And, you know, there's nothing that I'm talking about that wasn't directly referenced by Rick Tocchet himself, who talked about worrying that the club might lose their identity and feeling responsible that they didn't spend more time on defensive zone work at training camp and on down the line. So, you know, not that I'm taking my cues solely from Rick Tocchet, but like, this is what the organization's thinking.
Yeah, his words have a lot of weight.
They should.
He's super honest and super candid and interesting.
But also, as you know, I've reported at length and worked through at length and discussed at length with various people in the organization. Like, this is what the organization is trying to accomplish with their player signings, with their moves, with their approach to training camp, with, you know, a tactical solution to try and solve the problem of how do we win a Stanley Cup? How do we bring a Stanley Cup to Vancouver? Like, the first game provided us with a fascinating example of mixed results, and I think that's worth diving into. By the way, Dom's left foot texted in, Drance pooping on a 6-year-old's take is very on-brand.
A couple of people texted in that. And like, hey, all I'll say is, she wants to get in the arena and have some Canucks takes, you got to be prepared. You got to be prepared for some pushback. It's a good introduction to the life of a Canucks fan for my six-year-old daughter.
Well, little Dodd,
here's why you're wrong.
I'm a big fan of your father, but you got to work on
here's
those
why
takes.
Only a simpleton would think that. All right. On that.
What are you, six?
Yes. All right. On that note, we will go to break. Vancouver Giants GM Barkley Parnetta joins us next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It is Thomas Drance here with you for the final segment of the show, live from the Kintec Studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at dunbarlumber.com. Barclay Pernetta is going to join us here. And in fact, we have him on the line. He is the general manager of the Vancouver Giants, and we're very pleased to have him on the show. Barclay, thanks very much for doing this. How are you?
Well, I'm excited. I think this is the first time, isn't it, that I've had the two of you, Jamie, and
Oh, is it?
Here, so.
I don't know about
I think
that.
Together,
I feel like you've been on and I've been away. So I think you're right.
You might be right.
I was going to say one of you was always away. So
I don't want to question the GM. All right, so I'll take your word for it.
Awesome.
I know you guys are coming off a really good result Tuesday in Red Deer, 5-2 win. You're 4-2 on the season. Just tell us a little bit about that win and how the season's going so far.
Well, I mean, that win was, you know, arguably it was the first time that I saw our players execute. The coaches did an incredible job. So they executed what the coaches did in pregame video, and they followed the plan, and it really paid off. Red Deer are a really heavy, hard team that were really playing well, and the game plan that they stuck to, full marks to the coaching staff to sort of after it was a bit of a bounce back because the Calgary game was a bit of a letdown. It looked like we're tired from the bus or for whatever reason it didn't come together, but they certainly snapped it back to tension. And all along this year, we have higher standards. Like, our expectations are higher for not just myself, but our coaching staff, our players. And I think it's starting to pay off that we're enforcing that and sort of reinforcing that with these players because they stepped up to the occasion. There's no doubt about it.
Now, Barclay, last night I was at Rogers Arena watching the Canucks. I also was watching Sam Honzik, of course, former Giant, making his NHL debut last night. When you get an opportunity to see a player like that realize their dreams, you've had a chance to work with them. I mean, what does that mean to you? What were your impressions from Honzik on his NHL debut?
There's so many different levels that this is so great. It's great for Sam. It's great for the Vancouver Giants. It's great for the Calgary Flames. I mean, the work that Michael Dick and Manny and Adam have done with him, getting him ready and prepared for that moment, really, I think, I don't think people have any idea how much that probably meant to Sam. And he will realize and has realized already that, you know, with Michael instilling the work ethic, Manny was a pro coach that was able to sort of explain to him how it will work. And just for Sam to put that extra work in. You know, he didn't have the best year in the world for us last year, and I'm sure he'd be the first to say that. But for him to bounce back, work as hard as he did this summer. And, you know, it's funny, I was speaking with Craig Conroy because Sam didn't wear 29 in the preseason, and Craig was pretty excited to phone down to the trainer and say, hey, let's slap 29 on there for him so when Sam comes in, he can see it, but he didn't tell him. So that was a nice touch, I thought, by Craig, for sure.
I want to ask you about another former Vancouver Giants priority selection, not someone who played for the team, but someone who's having a tremendous amount of success elsewhere. North Vancouver's Chloe Primorano already making an impression in NCAA hockey. She's already scored. I mean, she's going to be probably the best freshman in Div 1, and she's only 17, having accelerated to get there. What did you see that caused you to select her originally, and what are your expectations? I mean, could she be one of the best women's hockey hockey prospects Western Canada's ever produced here?
I don't want to label Chloe. Look, it's funny we talk about this. I was just on a recruiting trip actually in Minnesota with some of our American prospects, and I actually happened to go to, I wanted to go to the Chick-fil-A on the Minnesota Gophers campus. So I actually text Chloe and said, hey, I'm on the campus. And it was after the day she scored a goal, and I just said, great job, good debut. And right away she responded. This kid is, I mean, she's not a kid. She's a young adult. She's incredibly well put together with her mindset. I mean, I don't want to put this label on her, but I would refer to her as the Connor Bedard of girls hockey.
Yes.
She, you know, and full marks, it wasn't just myself. Like, I mean, Chloe was playing in the best league for her age, boys or girls, in Canada when she was selected, and she consistently performed as one of the top players. And it was physical too, because there was body contact. This wasn't a non-contact league, and her IQ is off the charts. You know, it's another funny thing, we were just talking about her today in the rink. I'm in Red Deer at a U15 tournament, and I just said, like, I'm intimidated when I speak to her about hockey, because her knowledge far outweighs what I know. So I try not to. I try to avoid hockey conversations with him. It really makes me feel a little bit dumb. But just an incredible kid, and again, to be under the spotlight that she's been in, and to handle herself the way she does, incredible. Like she really, really, really has everything together. Her family did a great job with her, obviously, and you know. It doesn't surprise me one bit that she's doing what she's doing.
Now, a couple rookies on your team, and Ryan Lynn and Brett Olson, were just named to Hockey Canada's roster for the U-17 Hockey Challenge. Obviously, there's two teams, so one of them's on one team, one of them's on the other. But with Ryan in particular, you know, born in Richmond, defenseman, offensively talented, you know, a 170 in terms of his weight. I'm just curious, as someone who spends a lot of time watching, you know, amateur talent develop in British Columbia, Barkley, have you noticed, like, is there a Quinn Hughes effect in terms of how young defenders, players like Ryan, are sort of gravitating toward defense and approaching the game?
Well, I don't think it's a Quinn Hughes effect. Mm. I think it's just a product of what the kids are doing today. So, for Ryan, I'm sure Quinn would have had some influence, but he really didn't break out until Ryan was a bit older, so he wouldn't have seen him a lot when he's younger. But what's happening now is the availability, the skills and skating that these kids have,
right,
and the amount of time that they put towards the game practicing that, not just systems, is really starting to show. And more than anything, I think that's where a lot of this comes from. Now, with a player like Ryan, some of this is just an innate ability that you can't teach, and he's figured that out. You can't manufacture hockey players. You have to have some natural given talent and be able to think the game the right way in order to do what he's doing. Otherwise, you know, we'd be able to pump out players all the time that were all like this, but they're not. There's a lot of people that see things differently, and he's definitely one of them.
In conversation with Vancouver Giants GM Barkley Perneta here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. And we talked about your former captain, Sam Honzik, who's in the NHL now. We saw him last night with the Flames. I did want to ask you about your new captain, Mazden Leslie, named captain for this season. I know certainly in terms of point production, he's off to a hot start for you guys with 8 points in 4 games for him. And, you know, he's just a very long tenured player with your program. How have you seen his game, but also his leadership, the off-ice side of things develop in his time with the Giants? Why was he the right choice to be the captain this year?
Well, you know, typically when these kids enter at such a young age, I mean, he entered at 15 when we played in the COVID bubble. Yeah. We were actually allowed to bring him in as an underage player, and he played 24 games that year, I believe, 25. But he's come so far. It's not any different than, say, Justin Sirdoff, who ended up being our captain. You know, we get these kids when they're kids, literally, and we watch them grow up before our eyes. Hopefully, we can guide and help them make the right decisions, but it's also up to the players. And Mazden really has matured. Mazden is a bit more of an old soul because Mazden doesn't always necessarily look at things from his perspective. I know there's a moment in time when we made a trade, and, you know, obviously if you trade to Zach Ospachuk, players are upset and down. And Mazden was kind of the kind of guy that's like, hey, you guys, like, how could they not do that trade? Did you not see what they got in return? So he kind of sees a bigger picture. And Mazden has worn the Giants jersey, and like, his value of what the Giants need to be is huge. He really is invested in our wins and losses. He cares a lot. Not that everybody else doesn't, but he really wears it. And for him to be the captain speaks volumes about him, and it also has calmed his game down because now he's a leader, and he's expected to respond differently in difficult times, and he's shown that so far early on, and that's why he's our captain. That's exactly why, because he's really just maturing into a young man and sets a good example for everybody.
And Barkley, I know a lot of buzz around Cameron Schmidt, draft eligible this year, and you know, he's off to a fantastic start. 8 goals already in just 6 games, which is phenomenal. But I know you have a couple of other very interesting draft eligible prospects who are off to hot starts as well. Why don't you tell us a little bit about them?
Now, I notice you're avoiding saying the last name of one of them, maybe, because you want to know
I'm
right.
That's correct. I am. That's exactly why I phrased it like that, Barkley.
So Aaron Obafayo has really taken a step. He has worked extremely hard this summer. He came back in a higher level of fitness, even though he was a fit kid, but he gained a step. So he's off to a great start. Obviously, he's teamed up with Levis and Schmidty on that top line. I mean, our power play is really clicking right now. It's first in WHL. It's at an amazing 42.7%, which is pretty impressive.
Not bad.
I don't think that's sustainable, but we're certainly a dangerous team on that power play, and he's one of the young players that brings that. I mean, Jacob Orescovic is taking a step. He's finding ways to score goals, even though he's not on the power play. It's just a group that is really starting to come together. Our 2-0-6 defensemen, Howe and Roberts, are really starting to establish themselves with a veteran presence, as Shorzy would say. So I'm really happy with the young group that we have and people out there. You know what? We're actually the third youngest team in the WHL currently. So to be doing what we're doing and have this, like when you've got these kids that are all on the same mission, these guys, you've got to come see these kids because there's some amazing kids to watch. And I think there's names here that you'll be hearing about for a long time.
Barkley, always really appreciate the time. I'm glad you finally got to chat with both of us at the same time. I'm sure we'll do this again soon. I know you guys continue in Alberta tomorrow against Lethbridge, and then I believe next home game is October 19th at the Langley Event Center. So encourage people, as you said, some really exciting young players on the Giants this year, off to a good start. Sounds like fun hockey to watch. Encourage everyone to get out there and do so, and thanks so much for taking the time to chat with us.
It's awesome. And Jamie and Thomas, you're welcome to join us. So come on out.
Thank you.
And I'll hang out with you for the game. We can watch a game and hang out in a box or something.
That sounds delightful.
We will definitely take you up on that. Thanks, Barkley.
Thanks, Barkley.
Awesome. All right, guys. Take care.
That is Vancouver Giants general manager Barkley Parnetta weighing in on, some impressive early season performances from various Vancouver Giants players.
So are we going to go watch Everett?
Oh, when Landon DuPont comes through? Actually, we should, actually. Now, does McKenna come this year? No, he came last year. Because he's in the, I'm pretty sure he came last year.
I think he's going to come in his draft. I know he goes through Everett, though. I am going to probably drive down to see McKenna versus DuPont.
I'm actually worried because Gavin McKenna hasn't scored a goal yet. He has like 8 assists in 6 games.
Oh, yeah, don't worry about it.
No, I'm not actually worried. But Landon DuPont, we got to play Rick Tocchet. But the Landon DuPont update, what, like 11 points in 7 games for him? As a 15-year-old, he's like a young 15.
Insane.
He's not like a fake 15. It's like he doesn't turn 16 until like May.
I'm telling you right now, though, McKenna's going to set the Dub on fire. Like, Connor Bedard got off to a slow start in his draft minus one, too. You know, like, and then from November on, you know, was picking his teeth with everybody.
Yeah, so we might have to do a Canucks talk outing to see Landon DuPont. By the way, also, I was thinking about this today. So 2 years ago, it was Gavin McKenna. Last year it was Landon DuPont. I need my way too early, 4 years ahead, NHL draft phenom to get hyped about. I'm taking submissions. 2028 NHL draft is what we're talking about now,
well,
guys.
Well, look, some years there isn't one.
No, I know, but I want to at least see what's out there, sample what's out there.
Okay.
So let me know if you have a suggestion. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You need the next Gavin McKenna, the next Landon DuPont, ideally from Western Canada.
Friday, November 29th. We'll get it, Barkley.
Let's go.
But Friday, November 29th at the Langley Event Center, Landon DuPont rolls through.
Let's go. All right. We'll wrap up the show here, hearing from Rick Tocchet after the Canucks practice at UBC today. Here is the Canucks head coach.
Yeah, it's a weird game. It's, it's one of those things. Got comfortable 4-1. Power play was cooking. Kind of gave life on the shorthanded. That kind of, and then, you know, obviously our D-zone coverage was a little bit loose. At the end of the day, though, I think we gave him 11 chances at 5-on-5 or 6 grade A's. It wasn't horrible. It just it looked horrible. And obviously our decision-making with the pocket turnovers, just it was like a loose game. So it's game one, and, we'll learn from it.
You've got some healthy bodies here. It looked like maybe Juleson's going to get a look here.
Yeah, we haven't made a decision yet, but Jules could get in. Suits could get in. So I think he's feeling better. So there could be some lineup changes.
You said yesterday morning that game one, everybody had to temper their emotions a little bit. Did the coach have to temper his emotions?
No, I wasn't upset at all. I mean, it's a learning lesson, you know. You know, it was plain as day. Like, you know, game management, you know, I think we gave Calgary some life with a shorthanded goal. And I think they started winning more battles. And honest to God, we didn't go through a guy. I mean, that's the only thing I disappointed. I don't like when guys circle. I think we were circling everything. Like I said, it's 4-1. People thought it was going to be an easy night. And there's no easy nights in the NHL. And I had to Calgary. They worked their asses off.
You mentioned identity last night. Is identity something that a team constantly has to work on? Is it a mistake to think that the identity from last year just carries over?
Yeah, but identity is something you're creating and you're always building on it, and you got to keep the foundation of it. you're on the ice for a minute, you have the puck. Instead of making a play, high-risk play, and then we have to defend, you keep, that's championship teams do. Now, you listen, even championship teams will make mistakes, and they'll get out of their identity every once in a while. It's, you know, it's that you, how quick can you get back to your identity? So, obviously, tomorrow night we're playing a, I mean, if you're talking to top three teams for hard work, and Philly's top three, they work their asses off. So we got to match that effort and, you know, and learn from last game.
You talked about lessons, applying to players. Is there lessons for you as well?
In what sense?
Is there something you draw from?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, I really believe that, you know, my lesson is, like, I'm not going to go in after the game and rip the guys. I mean, it was a, they know, they owned it, and it's like, you know, let them steer the ship here, like, you know. I mean, we'll give them the game plans against Philly. And, you know, most parts of the time, we adhered to the game plan. Like, we didn't lose a lot of losing streaks, actually, because of it. So I give them a lot of credit. Yeah, a little bit of a stinker, but we'll bounce back on that.
Philly were a big challenge for you guys last year.
Yeah.
Is this actually kind of the perfect challenge for you coming off last night?
Yeah, I think it's a – we keep saying the lesson. It's just I honestly don't think it's a – much other than the fact that our time and space in the D zone and not playing a little gritty enough in our own end kind of costs us a little bit, and that's just not us. So, you know, a little bit's on me. I've been preaching transition. I've been preaching all this other stuff. You know, we still got to be the meat potatoes without the puck, and that's why we did a little bit more 5-on-5 play today.
Rick, talk about that D-zone coverage. The major emphasis with the new guys, just refreshing some of the guys that have come back.
Yeah, I'm not going to point fingers at them. It's them learning, too, because there's some spots that a couple of those guys were kind of, you know, they kind of left their man because they thought of something else. So it's, you know, we just got to give them some reps. You know, we got to give those guys some games with the full team. Like I said, it's a training camp. You got to remember, half the team's playing. You know, some guys didn't even play. Like, Millsy didn't play there. So there's some rust that we're still going to have. I don't know, last night you saw how many goals were scored. I mean, eight goals, six goals. Like, I think that's the first thing. And after exhibition games, the first bunch of games, there's a lot of goals because guys are kind of all over the place, these on the coverages. So,
what did you see from Jason this time?
For his camp?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's had a pretty good camp. I think he's had a good camp. With Jules, you're going to get what you get. He's a guy that we're lucky to have him, and you can put him at any time. You know, I think that he had a really first good 2 weeks. I thought a couple exhibition games he struggled a little bit. But when he plays his identity, he's a really good player for us.
Rick, 12 block shots last night, and it looked like on a couple of goals, you know, players were in position, but they were just a kind of a little
for bit us, off. You mean defensively?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that something that you can work on in practice? Yeah. Actually blocking shots and getting in that position?
Yeah, I mean, blocking shots is tough in practice, but boxing out and chipping the body, you can do. You know, we can practice that. That's habits. And I think when you box out and you let your goalie see the puck, I mean, that's really what it comes down to, box outs. And, you know, I'm not sure that we were that bad boxing out last night, but it's something that we should always work on.
Did you say anything to Shelox, or do you think you needed to say anything to him?
Yeah, I talked to him after the game. I said, listen, if you're going to be in this business a long time, those games are going to happen, you know? You know, he's a really good goaltender. And to be a really good goaltender, you can ask Denver, you're going to have a night like that where, you know, he said, I could add this one, I could add it. You just go and, you know, come to practice the next day and you work at your game. I mean, he's fine. And, you know, we've put him in tough spots and he's responded, so I'm not worried about him.
With Juleson, we saw his last year. You know, he had an opportunity to get some one-on-one time. It wasn't maybe successful right off the bat, but he improved his play. Is he the blueprint for Forbert and DeHarnay in that regard?
1,000,000%. You know, I think that whether, you know, Vinny sits out some games, he's going to work with our guys. Worked with Hagi, worked with Dakota. Like, you can't be afraid to have that. Juleson can come in, I don't know if it's tomorrow or the next game, and we can have a little bit of a rotation, and guys can work with the coaches. I think that's important.
Give up the overtime goal rather than score the overtime goal?
I'd rather win and have that lesson, to be honest with you. But yeah, no, I know what you're saying. No, honestly, it's, you know, these are moments, and it's like I said, it's the first game of the year. I'm not quite sure the coaches have to say too much. I mean, the players watch their shifts. They know what they could do better. You know, there's some forwards there. They had average nights or less than average nights. And why did you have an average night? I have, you know, my, you know, they'll hear from me why, but I think they say it. I don't have to say it.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet answering questions after his team practiced today at UBC. John Shorthouse putting in work day after a game in the scrum after practice asking questions. Shout out to Shorty.
Well, when
did they hit on Halford and Brough yesterday? Like,
well, when they're practicing in his neighborhood.
Fair enough. Yeah. I'm trying to give him credit. I'm impressed. Sure. He's putting in the work, man. You love to see it, even from a legend like John Shorthouse.
You do not, under any circumstances, have to hand it to John Shorthouse.
Signed, Thomas Trantz. Do not give him credit for going to practice.
I want to be very clear, especially because he listens to the podcast. He's the best.
Won't come on our podcast, though. Did Halford and Brough.
Oh, yeah. He doesn't really like to do radio. I think I could get him in.
He said he would do Halford and Brough once on this day one of the season.
And that's it.
And he said if they make the playoffs, he'll do a playoff hit.
Right.
We should get one.
That's my plea.
Shorty,
the problem is
give us one.
The problem is because they bump you around so much, I save my pleas. Like, that's why I only ever do Murph.
Right.
When
you're not. You, like, keep your favors dry until you have to use them.
Correct.
Yeah.
Like, I fire my weapons when I really need them. So I feel like if I ask Shorthouse, it's going to be like, you're out sick suddenly. And also my other guest who was going to be on has, like, had something happen. Yeah. Like, you know,
and I'll say this, Shorty, if you're listening, we don't have to talk serious hockey. We can just shoot the breeze and have fun.
He knows that's a lie. If we're saying
no. It's not a lie for me.
No,
you
I
might
know.
Be lying. I'm not going to make myself
it's
a
lie for me though. Like,
well, that's too
Shorthouse
bad.
Knows who I am.
Yeah, that's fair. Anyways. All right. We're going to wrap it up there. We will be back tomorrow. Another game day. Game two of 82. Very exciting tomorrow. Actually, I am excited for that one. Matvei Michkov coming into town with the Philadelphia Flyers.
Very exciting.
So that's an exciting one. We'll be on tomorrow. Of course, Dim will join us as well. We'll preview the game. Have a great day. We're back tomorrow here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.